The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're really getting into something quite serious and honestly pretty emotional. It's about the youth mental health crisis. We're doing a deep dive into Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation. You might have seen it. How the great rewiring of childhood is causing an epidemic of mental illness. It's a really significant piece of work.
Definitely. And if you're a parent or maybe an educator or just, you know, paying attention, you've probably sensed that something shifted dramatically.
Yeah, around the early 2010s, right? The data is just impossible to ignore. Huge spikes in anxiety, depression, self-harm, even suicide rates among teens.
Especially girls. The increase for girls is particularly steep.
So our mission today really is to understand why. Haidt's book isn't just describing the problem. It's like a forensic investigation trying to pinpoint the cause.
Exactly. We want to get beyond just feeling worried.
Yeah.
What actually caused this decline? What are the mechanics behind it? Haidt aims to show a causal link, not just correlation.
Okay, so before we dig into the argument itself, maybe a bit about Jonathan Haidt. Who is he and why is his take on this so compelling?
Sure. Well, he's a very well-known American social psychologist. He's a professor of ethical leadership at NYU's Stern School of Business.
And people might know his earlier books, right? Like The Happiness Hypothesis or The Righteous Mind, really big ideas in those.
That's right. Those explored morality, culture, psychology. What makes Haidt's approach here distinctive is that he's looking at this as a social scientist, not, say, a clinical therapist.
So less individual treatment, more big picture.
Precisely. He synthesizes psychological concepts, but focuses on how these huge societal shifts, changes in our environment, our social structures, interact with, you know, the developing minds of kids and teenagers.
Yeah.
And importantly, he uses a ton of data. Public health data, comparative data from multiple countries, showing this isn't just happening in the U.S. It's a pattern in many English-speaking nations.
It feels like a natural progression from his book, The Coddling of the American Mind, which he co-wrote. He looked at issues on college campuses then.
Right. But he realized the problem didn't start in college. It started much earlier.
Yeah, he pinpoints it to early adolescence, basically when kids started getting smartphones and constant internet access.
Exactly. The roots were back in childhood, fundamentally changing how kids grew up.
Okay, so let's get to the core argument of the anxious generation. What's the central thesis?
It's actually strikingly clear. Haidt argues the mental health crisis is a direct result of a massive shift. We moved from what he calls a play-based childhood to a phone-based childhood.
A play-based childhood to a phone-based one. He calls that the great rewiring, right?
That's the term. The great rewiring. And he says this rewiring wasn't caused by just one thing, but by what he calls the twin toxins. Two powerful trends hitting kids at the same time.
Twin toxins. Okay, what are them?
It's a bit of a paradox. First, the overprotection of children in the real world. Think intense safety concerns, loss of independence, less unsupervised play.
Okay, making them maybe less resilient in some ways.
Precisely. And at the same time, the second toxin, the radical underprotection of children in the virtual world. We handed them these incredibly powerful devices with access to everything, often with little guidance or supervision.
Wow. So overprotected physically, underprotected digitally.
That's the toxic combination.
Yeah.
We wrapped them in bubble wrap for the playground, but then threw them into the digital deep end without swim lessons.
That really captures it. We were so worried about, I don't know, abduction risk, which is statistically tiny, but gave them a device connecting them to, well, potentially billions of strangers and endless harmful content.
Exactly. Made them fragile in one domain, then exposed that fragility to a completely new, often hostile domain.
So the book lays all this out, the diagnosis, the evidence.
Yes, it's comprehensive. It diagnoses the causes, presents the evidence, those graphs we mentioned, and importantly offers a path forward. It's not just complaining. It's about how we might collectively reverse this great rewiring.
Let's talk about that evidence then. Part one of the book, right? The graphs. You said they're startling.
They really are. Haidt compiles dozens of charts, primarily tracking internalizing disorders, anxiety, depression, self-harm. And what you see consistently across the U.S., U.K., Canada, Australia, New Zealand is this sharp inflection point around 2010 to 2012.
Not a gradual rise, but a sudden break.
A sudden, steep climb, especially, as we said, for girls. Boys see an increase, too, particularly in suicide rates later. But the curve for girls' anxiety and depression just shoots up around 2012.
And Haidt argues this timing is crucial for figuring out the cause.
Absolutely. He systematically looks at other potential causes. The 2008 recession. The spike comes too late for that to be the primary driver. Increased academic pressure. School shootings. Political polarization.
None of them quite fit the timeline or the demographic pattern.
Exactly. None align so perfectly with that specific 2010-2012 window, or explain the particular gender disparity, as well as the hypothesis that links it to the explosion of smartphones and mobile social media apps hitting early adolescents en masse.
Okay, so the timeline points pretty strongly towards the tech shift.
It's the clearest signal in the data.
Now let's unpack those twin toxins more. The first one you mentioned was the decline of play, the overprotection side.
Right. This is part two of the book. Haidt talks about the rise of safetyism, this culture obsessed with eliminating all risk from childhood.
Which sounds good on the surface, right? Keep kids safe.
Of course. But the consequence was the near elimination of unsupervised, child-led free play. Play isn't just fun. Haidt argues it's a biological necessity for healthy development. It's how kids learn social skills, conflict resolution, risk assessment.
And this ties into that concept you mentioned earlier, anti-fragility.
Yes, exactly. This idea comes from Nassim Taleb, but Haidt applies it brilliantly here. Children aren't like fine china, easily broken. They're anti-fragile. Like our immune systems, they need exposure to stressors, small challenges, minor risks, social disagreements to grow stronger, more resilient, more capable.
So by trying to remove all risk, all struggle, we inadvertently made them more fragile.
We prevented their psychological immune systems from developing properly. We denied them the crucial experiences needed to build resilience and problem-solving skills on their own.
So generations before, maybe Gen X or older millennials, we had more of those free-range experiences, getting into scrapes, figuring things out without adults intervening immediately.
That's the idea, that messy, real-world experience was like developmental weight training. Gen Z largely missed out on that training.
And they missed it right before being handed incredibly powerful, addictive technology. Fragility meets the fire hose of the internet.
Precisely. Which brings us to the second toxin, the underprotection in the virtual world. This is part three, detailing the harms of the great rewiring. Haidt outlines four key mechanisms of harm from the phone-based childhood.
Okay, what's the first one?
Social deprivation. This sounds counterintuitive because kids are constantly connected online, right?
Yeah, they seem hypersocial just online.
But Haidt argues that online interaction is an impoverished substitute for real, embodied face-to-face interaction. We evolved for rich, synchronous, nuanced communication, reading, body language, tone, micro-expressions. Online communication, especially text-based, lacks all that depth.
So it's like replacing nutritious food with junk food. It fills you up, but doesn't nourish you.
That's a great analogy. Teens have a deep biological need for rich peer connection. Replacing quality with quantity and often performative, curated online interactions starves that need. It leads to higher rates of loneliness and depression, ironically.
Okay, social deprivation. What's number two?
Sleep deprivation. This one's maybe more obvious, but profoundly damaging. It's not just the blue light affecting melatonin.
It's the phone in the bedroom.
Yes. The constant alerts, the pressure to respond, the fear of missing out, FOMO, it keeps their brains wired, preventing them from getting the deep restorative sleep that's absolutely critical for mental health, emotional regulation, and learning.
Makes sense. And the third harm?
Attention fragmentation. The platforms are designed for it. Constant notifications, endless scrolling feeds. It trains the brain for distraction, making deep focus the kind needed for study, complex thought, even reading a book incredibly difficult.
We're conditioning kids to have shattered attention spans.
Essentially, yes. And the fourth foundational harm Haidt details is addiction.
And he argues this isn't accidental, right? It's by design.
Absolutely. He points out that tech companies employ sophisticated techniques from behavioral psychology. Things like variable rewards, the unpredictable nature of notifications and likes, like a slot machine, create powerful dopamine loops.
Which is especially potent for teenagers.
Critically so. The adolescent brain, especially the prefrontal cortex responsible for judgment and impulse control, is still developing. It's uniquely vulnerable to these highly stimulating addictive designs. The tech is basically hijacking their developing reward systems.
So those are the four main harms: social deprivation, sleep deprivation, attention fragmentation, and addiction. Now, how does this explain the gender difference we talked about earlier?
Right, the differential effects.
Uh-huh.
While everyone is susceptible, the nature of the harm often differs between girls and boys, partly due to the platforms they tend to use and how they internalize stress.
Okay, so for girls?
For girls, the harms tend to be more social and internalizing. Platforms like Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, they are highly visual and driven by social comparison. This amplifies issues like perfectionism, body image concerns, fear of judgment, and relational aggression like cyberbullying. The stress often turns inward, leading to anxiety and depression.
And for boys?
For boys, while they certainly experience anxiety too, a common pattern Haight identifies is one of withdrawal and isolation. When real-world social skills and confidence are underdeveloped, boys may retreat into more controllable virtual worlds.
Like video games or other online content.
Exactly. Intense video games, online communities, sometimes online pornography. These offer predictable rewards, a sense of mastery or escape, but can lead to profound social isolation, a failure to develop real-world ambitions and skills, what some call failure to launch.
Okay, so zooming out again, what are the big overarching messages we should take away from this? Maybe three key themes?
I think three stand out. First, the core concept of the twin toxins. Understanding that paradox, how overprotecting kids in the real world actually made them more vulnerable when they were simultaneously underprotected online, the two trends work together synergistically.
Right. The physical safetyism creating fragility just as the digital floodgates opened.
Second, the absolute necessity of anti-fragility for development. We have to internalize that children aren't delicate glass objects. They need to encounter and overcome small challenges, manageable risks, social friction. It's not optional. It's how they build psychological strength. Eliminating all risk prevents resilience.
We have to let them scrape their knees, emotionally speaking.
Metaphorically, yes. And third, the crucial understanding that technology is not neutral. These platforms aren't just passive tools. They are powerful psychological engines designed for specific commercial purposes, engagement, addiction, data harvesting, which are often directly at odds with healthy child development.
They're not designed for kids' well-being.
Their primary design goal is engagement and profit, not adolescent mental health.
The book also has some really memorable lines, doesn't it? Ways Haight frames these ideas.
Yes, his phrasing is very deliberate and powerful. One that really sticks is the transition from a play-based to a phone-based childhood is the largest uncontrolled experiment humanity has ever performed on its own children.
Wow, uncontrolled experiment. That really captures the recklessness of it all.
It highlights the scale and the lack of forethought. Another key one is the phone-based childhood is not just different from the play-based childhood. It is antithetical to everything we know about healthy human development.
Antithetical, meaning it directly opposes what kids need.
Fundamentally incompatible. He's not saying it's just a slight change. He's saying it undermines the very foundations of healthy development.
And what about for schools?
He's very blunt. A school that is not phone-free is not a learning environment fit for the 21st century. He sees removing phones during the school day as non-negotiable for restoring focus and real social interaction.
That's a strong stance. And one more?
This one points towards solutions. Individual solutions will not work for a collective action problem.
Meaning one parent trying to hold back the tide alone probably won't succeed.
Right. If you're the only parent keeping your kid off social media or delaying the smartphone, your child might feel socially excluded. Real change requires shifting the norms for everyone. It needs coordination.
Which leads directly into the solutions part of the book. Since it's a collective action problem, Haight proposes collective actions, right? A plan.
Yes. He offers a clear 4-point plan aimed at shifting those norms.
Okay, what's the first point?
No smartphones before high school. He suggests age 14 is a baseline. This doesn't mean no communication, Wes. Basic phones, flip phones, watches that call and text are fine for safety, but delay the powerful smartphone with its constant internet and app store access.
Okay, delay the smartphone until high school. What's number two?
No social media before 16. He argues we need to actually enforce the existing 13-plus age limits and ideally raise them to 16, recognizing how vulnerable younger teens are to the comparison and addiction features during those critical middle school years.
Makes sense developmentally. Third point.
Phone-free schools. This means policies where phones are put away for the entire school day, not just in class, but during lunch, recess, hallways, using things like lockers or lockable pouches like Yonder.
The goal being to improve focus and force kids to actually interact face-to-face again.
Exactly. Reduce distraction, reduce cyberbullying that happens during school hours, and recreate opportunities for unstructured, real-world social learning.
And the fourth point, it feels like the flip side of the digital coin.
It is. More independence and free play in the real world. This is about parents and communities consciously pushing back against overprotection, encouraging unsupervised play, letting kids take small risks, giving them real chores and responsibilities, actively cultivating competence and resilience in the physical world.
So it's about taking away the digital harms and simultaneously restoring the developmental necessities in the real world.
Precisely. It's a two-pronged approach to reverse the great rewiring.
So as we wrap up our deep dive here, what's the single most clarifying insight you took away from Haidt's work?
For me, I think it's the power of the diagnosis itself. Before reading this, the crisis felt overwhelming, confusing. Maybe it was screen time, maybe social media, maybe pressure, maybe something else entirely. Haidt provides such a clear, evidence-based explanation focusing on that specific shift from play-based to phone-based, driven by the twin toxins around 2012. That clarity replaces confusion with understanding. And importantly, if we understand the cause, the problem feels less like an unstoppable force and more like something we can actually address. It implies solvability.
Yeah, that resonates. For me, the biggest takeaway is that message of agency and ultimately hope. It's easy to feel resigned, like technology has just taken over childhood. But Haidt argues forcefully that these are social norms we created and they're norms we can change. Childhood development has fundamental needs, sleep, play, real connection, manageable challenges. They aren't optional extras.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument is that by recognizing those needs and acting collectively, parents, schools, maybe even policymakers, we can push back against the platforms and prioritize what children actually need to thrive. It's a call to action, not despair.
Well said. It's about making conscious choices to align childhood again with human developmental needs.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.